Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Allison. It is a pleasure to have you on today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We've had a few minutes to refamiliarize ourselves with each other. It was a pleasure to be at the FFE event with you earlier this year, and now we're on the podcast. Before we dive into our topic, how about we just let you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Good morning, Jason. This is Allison Rickles. I'm the Executive Director and CEO of the Farmhouse Foundation, headquartered in Kansas City. Farmhouse is a men's international fraternity, and I'm the CEO of their educational foundation. So we raise money for leadership training, academic scholarships, computer technology, chapter housing, educational opportunities, and programs of our international fraternity.
Okay, so I looked at that brand last night as I was looking through the net. Farmhouse. What does that mean? Unpack that for me.
So Farmhouse, again, is a men's social fraternity. It's similar to other Greek lettered organizations, but we're one of three non-Greek lettered fraternities. So our name is different. We all also agriculturally related. About 60% of our students or our undergraduates come from rural communities of less than 20,000. So they're going to a campus most likely that's bigger than their hometown. And we're primarily on land grant universities. So lots of higher, major institutions like Iowa State. We were founded at the University of Missouri, large land grant universities. But we have a few smaller campuses that we're at as well. A couple other differentiators for farmhouses that we are alcohol free. So all of our chapter houses are not allowed to have alcohol in them for our members. And we're an open ritual. So parents, alumni, friends, university administrators can go and see any of our initiation or ritual ceremonies. So different and unique, but definitely progressive in terms of the students that we attract and the diversity of our members. Despite being an agriculture organization, you might think that we're predominantly, rural young men, but we have a good diversity of students and just a really rich experience for them.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's a little corner of that world that
absolutely.
I was not.
And in this, Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, that's just a corner of the world that I was not familiar with. It's kind of fascinating.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's, I think Farmhouse has a mature group of young men that are often attracted to it. And I think that's one reason that I'm able to really promote it and believe in it because of the values. You asked what Farmhouse means. It actually, every letter of the organization or every letter of our name is a different value. So part of me, I'll take a second to share it. So F is faith, and then ambition, reverence, morality, honesty, obedience, unity, service, and excellence. So we often say in our fundraising that we expect excellence out of our students, but we need those other virtues and values and volunteers to help us get us to achieve excellence.
Yeah, when you were describing that, I was thinking virtues and values. I was thinking, okay, so this is an organization that sort of within the Greek world, mm-hmm. and you're trying to sort of create a somewhat you kind of want to create the fraternity of brotherhood and all that sort of stuff, the traditions and everything that sort of comes with that. But you also have just a slightly different set of values, and so I can understand that. I get that.
Yeah. You know, and I would say every fraternity and sorority has values that they are founded upon and that are them. And, you know, certainly some emphasize it more than others. And I would say Farmhouse sets itself apart because those values are upfront and clear and really articulated to our students, and our alumni believe it and live it. And one of my favorite stories, founder who's long passed away, his name was D. Howard Doan. He was a legend in the agriculture industry, but we have a video of him saying, "You can't go very long and believing it and not living it." And he, you know, very much believed in the founding of Farmhouse and those values, and they're still very true 115 years later.
So that is a very good lead into and sort of a little bit enlightening to the suggestion of what we talked about, what we're going to talk about today, and I'll let you sort of tee that up. I'm a little more enlightened on why that, on why the suggestion might be there. So tell us what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. So for me, being with Farmhouse, I started right out of college. I went to the University of Northern Iowa, and my degree was in public relations, and I had minors in marketing and journalism. And Farmhouse was my first job out of college. I was fortunate to be offered a few other roles, but I felt like Farmhouse was the right fit for me. I was coming in as the second full-time person. My predecessor had been with the organization for a number of years, had moved over to run the foundation full-time after running both the fraternity and foundation. So I got to come in and really design my position and be able to leverage it and be a small shop. You do so many different things in your hands and all of it because you're having to do it all. You don't have other people to pass it on to. So I learned an immense amount. And then after being on staff for about 6 years, he decided to retire and said to me, I can't promise you the trustees would hire you because that's not my place. But I can teach you how to be the executive director if you want to learn. And it was an incredible gift. And I said, of course, even if I wasn't going to get the job, I knew that I wanted to learn more about fundraising and executive leadership and really being a CEO. And I was very young at the time. And I was fortunate that the trustees hired me. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in a bit, I'm sure. But I've been with Farmhouse now for almost 20 years. And I've been the executive director and CEO of the foundation for 13 and a half. And it's really fortunate for that longevity. My predecessor ended up staying with Farmhouse for nearly 46 years before he retired. So longevity is the name of the game for our Farmhouse volunteers and many of our staff.
So I have to say that longevity in these roles, whether it be in executive director roles or fundraising roles, is not something that we've talked about here on the podcast a whole lot. And I think there's sort of an underlying assumption and an understanding that the longer that you're, I think we all sort of get that the longer you're somewhere, there's certainly, you know, reasons why that's good for the employer and why that's good for the employee. But if we were to sort of unpack that in a much more meaningful way as it relates specifically to the sort of the fundraising function of an executive director, or for those who are in, say, director of development, you know, traditional fundraising type roles, why do you think longevity is so important? And perhaps if we could sort of sell longevity, because I don't think that's something that I'm selling hard enough, but it's certainly something that, like, for example, I recall I was working with a client, a multi-year client. They wanted to embark on a capital campaign. And I said, we've got to put some sort of longevity clause, is what we called it, in his contract to give him, to sort of incentivize him to stick around for a really long time.
Yeah.
Because you guys are trying to build really meaningful relationships. And on the back end of this, you guys are going to want to launch a pretty significant capital campaign. So we've got to get this fella really happy and excited about sticking around a long time. And you've got to signal to him that longevity matters. But why does it matter so much? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think the easy to understand is it continues to build those relationships. I think when it's a healthy person in the role, you know, sometimes you can get the people that have been there forever and they're never going to leave. They never have new ideas. They're just kind of stuck. That's not what I'm suggesting whatsoever. You know, somebody that's going to grow with the position, as I've been really fortunate to do, I think is where then you can have success. And I'm not calling myself the success story by any means, but I think it's an example of the belief in me, belief in the organization, but to have champions alongside of me who believe in Farmhouse and believe in me and my team is what really makes the difference. So you are building these lasting relationships. You are building friendships that, you know, I'm really cautious when it comes to that, in terms of, I know at the end of the day, our donors are not necessarily my peers. Some have become lifelong friends or just people that have been incredible mentors to me, that encourage me and support me. And I think that's really what matters the most, is to have that team of people that are championing you. And I think that's when you see fundraisers or your professional staff feel valued and want to stay. You know, any toxic environment, whatever the profession is, people aren't going to stay if they're not feeling fulfilled and happy. But I think that it really makes a difference when you have people thanking you for helping them with their philanthropy, or you get to build those relationships where you know the spouse or you know their children, and they look to you as a guide or somebody to connect with. Or, you know, people say, I want to make a gift. What do you suggest I do with my philanthropy this year with your organization? And so I think that's when it gets exciting, is when you can have a capital campaign that's successful and you have champions alongside of you that then makes it fulfilling and rewarding.
So I'm always trying to understand the person in the talent seat. So the individual like yourself, is there something about you that someone like me or an executive recruiter or something, somebody who's trying to hire great fundraisers, has to know and understand about people who are sort of inclined to stay a while? Is there something that sort of makes you more willing to sort of endure the ups and downs of, like, for example, right now, it's been a really tough year. We all know that we're sort of wrapping up 2020, and I'm sure there's been instances in the last 12 months where you could have said, man, I'd just really like to throw on the towel and try something new. So is there something about you that perhaps we need to understand, and then I guess the flip side, and we'll let you answer that question too, is there something that we have to understand about the organization that makes them particularly stick-to-itiveness is sort of the first thing that comes to mind. You and your employer have to have some degree of stick-to-itiveness is what comes to mind.
Sure. You know, I think of a number of things. First, about me, I'm definitely a loyalist, and I'm a helper by nature, and an achiever. I'm a big fan of Enneagram, so I'm a 2 and a 3. If that means anything to you, but I think that
it means enough. I will check it with my wife. It means a lot to my wife, and I think we have confused. I think I've taken it a couple of times. She knows exactly who me and our four children are.
Okay, I love Enneagram. But, you know, to that point, like, Somebody that sticks to things. And I often say, so farmhouse colors are green and yellow or green and gold. And I often will tell our donors, if they ask me, like, gosh, you've been here for a long time, are you going to stay? Or I kid you not, most every chairman that we've had for our board, before they say yes, they want to know that I will be staying for the next 2 years at their chair. And so I often will tell them the farmhouse grass is very, or I always say, let me start over. The grass isn't always greener on the other side, and this farmhouse grass is really green. And I think it's because I can see the potential and I can see the continued success we've had as an organization that makes me want to stay. And I adore the people that I get to work with, our staff and our volunteers and our donors, and getting to see them feel fulfilled and excited about what we're doing is very rewarding. And that's not to say I don't have frustrations or there aren't days where it is a tougher day than it is a rewarding day. But I know that every job has those ups and downs, as you say. And so I think for me personally, what has helped me stay is, again, having those champions, people, mentors, people that have really been in my corner to say, you're doing an amazing job. You're on the right track. We're here to support you. And then having opportunities to grow myself. I was 27. I was pregnant with my oldest daughter, who's now 13. I was not a member, and I was a young woman when I started the job. I had every single reason to not be successful in the role, and for this board, the board at the time, to tell me, no, you're not the right candidate. But at the time, they believed in me. And at times, maybe when I didn't believe in myself, that I would be great at it. And so for them, that they believed in me so much that they gave me a lot of confidence, and not that I didn't have it, but they helped push me. And then they helped push me by saying, we want you to be on boards, or being okay with me being on other nonprofit boards to help me be better as a CEO. Like I was president of FFEE, and I was on that board for fraternity and sorority.
Right.
For 6 years, I was on our AFP board and some other things, and they always encouraged me to do that. And then about 2 years ago, they said, we'd like to hire an executive coach for me or for you. And, you know, often you think, okay, what am I doing wrong? But it was more so, we want to help you continue to grow, and we want you to stay. And we know that that's going to take you to the next level. And so it was an incredible gift that they provided me an executive coach for 18 months. And Mark Pittman, we both know, was.
Yes, yes.
And it was just an incredible opportunity. And so being able to be afforded those things, and certainly we've had naysayers, we've had others that have been more challenging. But at the end of the day, I have been able to be surrounded by just talented people that help me be better, and then help our organization be better. When I started, we were raising about $800,000 a year. When I became the executive director, we had just hit the $1 million mark. We had about $5 to $6 million in assets, and we raise now between $3 and $4 million a year, and our assets are about $21 million. And so it's a much organization than when I started, especially as executive director. And so I've been able to grow as the organization grows. And I think that's made a big difference too, is that we haven't stalled or stalled. And even when things are challenging, we can continue to have successes. Even if we don't always meet our goals, we find successes within it. And I think that makes a huge difference too, Jason, is having the right people on the bus.
Am I picking up, and I know that, like you referenced working with Mark, Mark talks a lot about organizational design and organizational health and stuff, and that he keynoted at an event recently and talked a lot about organizational health. Mm-hmm. And I have to imagine that what I'm hearing sort of either explicitly or certainly in between the lines is that we're actually talking about a very healthy organization.
Absolutely.
I'm working with a client right now that the organization is particularly healthy. They're about, you know, they're I think they're edging up on about 15 years in. They're in a transition point with the organization. So the organization is sort of in the midst of a growth spurt, and they need a different leader. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that perhaps your organization was perhaps on the other side of some of its Is it a more established organization that has sort of matured through some of the growth stages?
Yeah.
And that it was very timely to have a longer tenured leader. And would it necessarily have mattered if we were talking about the executive director or perhaps a chief development officer? Could both roles have been, could both roles have been, people could stick around in both of them?
Yeah. Okay, so to unpack that a little bit, a couple things that come to my mind is that Farmhouse, our foundation itself, is almost 60 years old wasn't raising much money and initially didn't have a staff at all. You know, for the longest time, it was the fraternity executive director doing both roles. And in 97, the board decided to move my predecessor from the fraternity CEO role to and do both roles to just the foundation role, and that made a world of difference. The second change was when he went to a specific donor who, frankly, is one of my biggest mentors. That was CEO of a large banking organization. He went to him and said, "I'd like you to be a trustee." And he first told him no until he came up back with this strategic plan and a fundraising plan that was better than what he gave him. And I'm sure at the time it ruffled some feathers and felt crunchy, but it made a world of difference in that then bringing on the right people. Because once they got that gentleman, it became a snowball effect of the right people. Like,
yeah,
those that would come with their CEO hat, or we have a number of people that are in production agriculture and have some that are board members that have some very large farm operations. They come with that hat of how to operationalize organizations, or entrepreneurs and people that are really innovative. And so I think a big success of an organization or a healthy organization is because of the volunteers that you attract and the board members that you have. Because at the end of the day, their biggest responsibility is making sure their executive director is has their assessment, is compensated and reviewed and supported. And so if you have a toxic board that's not healthy and doing those things appropriately or the right ways, then I think that's when things go awry and an executive director feels unsettled. Fortunately, we didn't have that founder syndrome of, an older founder still staying around. But, we have a lot of our board members that feel very responsible for the organization and very tied to it and connected, which is exceptionally important. In fact, we have a gentleman that was on our fraternity board and our foundation board in the 80s and 90s that we brought back to our board now because he's just incredibly talented. And he jokes that it's night and day difference. When he was on the board previously, he was deciding whether or not to buy a fax machine. And now here we're talking about significant fundraising initiatives or big ways we invest our dollars. And so he says it lovingly and jokingly, but it's very true. We just evolved along ways and continue to evolve. But you have to stay thriving as an organization. You can't just sit back and rest on what you've been doing. So
is there anything that you feel like you've missed because you haven't moved around?
Good question. I've thought of that. It's hard. It's hard. I don't know. I've been hiring for a position right now, and it's so interesting to see what people tout as their successes. And I think, where would I place myself in that? I'm not hired to replace myself. So, hiring for more of a mid-level role, but it's really interesting to see what people consider their success points. I don't think I've necessarily missed anything because I've had such incredible growth. But I don't know what is next for me. This could be my forever job. I haven't landed on that, but I know that I feel very purposeful in what I get to do every day and feel like this is the right place for me in my life.
So one question that sort of occurs to me, and I've had the joy of, I had one longer tenured sort of employment relationship, and consequently I can think of, and we still live in the same community where I work there. And so consequently I've been able to have long tenured relationships with the donors mm-hmm. for whom we're given to the organizations. But I don't know if there's a lot of us out there.
Right. Yeah.
As fundraisers who can say, I've been in relationship with a donor for more than say 5 years. And I think that's some of the, like oftentimes in my seminars, I say, I think some of the dysfunction that happens in fundraising is that we haven't reconciled sort of what it means to sort of be in these giving and receiving sort of relationships, the mm-hmm. donor and the organizational representative, like we have reconciled all these other relationships in our lives, be they personal, professional relationships. You know, we know how to interact with our spouses, with our children, with our attorneys, with our teachers. You know, I know how to interact with the guy that sells me firewood. I mean, it, you know, I we know how to interact with different people in different aspects. I know how to interact with my parents and all that sort of stuff, but we just haven't figured out how to interact with a donor mm-hmm. without it seemingly sort of being all consumed with the idea of exchanging this charitable gift. What has it meant to you to be, because you've obviously had relationships with donors that have extended not only 5 years, but over a decade. So yeah. What does that look like?
Yeah. So, and some of them almost 2 decades.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think what it means to me is building those relationships that it doesn't feel as transactional, especially with major donors or when you're in a capital campaign. You know, you understand the ebbs and flows that, you know, you're going to hope and expect and ask for them to make big leadership gifts, but then be okay when maybe that doesn't happen for them because of life circumstances. You know, I opened my mail just a few minutes ago when I, right before we talked, and I got a lovely gift from a gentleman that I know his company has been closed because of COVID since March. And I didn't necessarily expect that he would be making a gift, but he and his wife did. It wasn't as much as he normally does, but it was still a pretty lovely, generous gift. And so I think understanding that context, and that at the end of the day, it's, I just think of it as not about me. I'm the vehicle to help people.
Sure.
With philanthropy. But I've gotten to know, you know, just amazing people. Like, I do have a gentleman that's been on my staff for just about 14 months now, but he and I've been colleagues for almost 20 years. He actually is president now of FFE. And Jason did some donor visits this fall, and he went to see a widow who has, she and her husband set up a couple of scholarships before her husband passed away, and then she did one in his memory. Well, because Farmhouse is green, our colors, I sign all of our thank you letters and most of the letters to donors in green ink. And she brought Jason, they met for lunch, and she brought Jason an entire bag full of green pens that she'd been saving just for me. And you think, like, gosh, that's just, what a lovely gesture. And she knows that about me. And then I know that about her. Like, I'm sending her a little holiday gift that I saw that I thought she would like. And it's not because I have to, it's because I want to. And I think you get to build those relationships with people, that you get to know them beyond just their checkbook. You value them for who they are and for what they bring to the table, and know that they can do just incredible things with their philanthropy and with their time and their interests.
Okay, so you've got me thinking. So we're going to have to sit on this one for a minute. And certainly before I let you go, we'll sort of wrap up on this thought. But
sure.
You sort of bookend that last comment with this notion of transactional sort of fundraising. And that has to be one of the biggest qualms that I sort of hear mm-hmm. fundraisers complain about. Is it feels so transactional, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's whiny. I want to say, well, you know what? Maybe if you sort of got what it looks like, or if you changed the patterns and the way you did the fundraising, it wouldn't feel so transactional. But if you think about it based on sort of what we're talking about here, there's got to be sort of this inverse relationship between the tenure of the person in your seat and the degree to which the charitable exchange feels transactional. Because in some ways, if fundraisers keep hopping around like they oftentimes do,
yeah.
they're really by the way that they've sort of defined their job, right? The way they're essentially in a transactional relationship with their employer.
Yeah.
That's really what transactional anything is really about. It's just a short-term, immediate, we're going to exchange one value in exchange for another. That's when you're only going to hang around with a boss or a board for 18 months, your relationship is transactional in many ways. And so consequently, to suggest that fundraising could feel any less transactional is, am I right? Are you following my thinking?
Exactly right. Because you don't know who those people are. I mean, and farmhouses were small compared to, say, larger national organization, but we still are national. We have about 30,000 alumni, and our donors, we average about 10% of our members, so our alumni and our students, making a gift every year, which is very high. I wish it was a whole lot higher, but it's very high comparatively, especially to our peer organizations. But I am blessed that I've had the chance to get to know so many people and doing donor visits or making phone calls or communicating by email or even through social media. And so I think that makes a big difference, is that you get to build these relationships. It doesn't feel very transactional, which it can. I mean, you know, you have a giving day and that feels very transactional because it's so fast paced. But if you can take a breath and look back and assess who gave and then follow up with genuine thank yous, whether that's thank you calls your board makes and your staff and volunteers, or you, like I said, I hand sign every thank you note that we, our thank you letter that we send, and I write a note to every person. And so I get notes back from people. And that's also how you build those relationships. They take time, though. I mean, I'm often signing letters after my daughters go to bed, and sometimes my husband does not appreciate that at night I'm still signing thank yous. But I think it matters, you know, and I think people want to be heard and seen and valued, and I'm telling them that they do. And I hope that they feel that, even if it's just in this little green note that says thank you.
Okay, one more question.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating. I mean, we're 200 episodes in and we've never had a conversation about longevity. So Allison, you get credit for this. Does your longevity in this role and Giving Tuesday, you just referenced like Give Days.
Yeah.
Give Days is sort of a phenomenon that sort of has played out in fundraising for the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. Does it change the way you understand the way that works? Because that in and of itself, I have to say that as a self-described, I'll confess I'm a critic, of fundraising practices, always for the betterment of what we're trying to do. And if there's anything that can be transactional and I think can perhaps cause harm, it is the way that some of these Give Days and Giving Tuesday sort of things play out. So does your longevity sort of improve your understanding of how all that works?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just one vehicle, right? Like it's just one tool to be successful. It shouldn't be your end all be all in how you're going to raise money. Now, for us, we moved our day of giving this year, because we moved it to our Founders Day, which is April 15th. Originally supposed to be tax day. I had some board members.
Yes.
Oh, don't do it on tax day. Then it wasn't tax day. So we just said, we're going to do it. And it was right when the pandemic was in, everything was shut down and our entire staff was working from home. And I literally didn't think we'd raise more than a dollar. And we ended up raising $118,000 in our day of giving, because people just felt really compelled to support the organization when our students weren't even living on campuses. They had moved home, but we said, here's the resources and the support that we're providing. And really were able to articulate the story of Farmhouse and shared a number of stories. And so I think it goes into the day of giving was the tool, the social media, the giving platform. But we also told stories to our donors, like about one gentleman that used to be on our staff that was a bone marrow donor, because LLS and Be the Match are our national philanthropies. And his recipient made a gift to us in his honor that day. And so we got permission from them and got to tell the story about our farmhouse men curing cancer. Like, not quite, but here's how one helped make somebody not have cancer anymore, because he gave them bone marrow. And so I don't necessarily attribute any of that to my longevity. I think it's the creative hat of getting to work with your staff or your volunteers to create creative challenges or be able to tell your story of your students or your members that are being changed by the organization. That at times can feel really small or insignificant, or it maybe is just a thing that for us students do, but gosh, this in a lot of ways changes people's lives. And for our donors to be able to see that and feel that, I think is where then the magic happens.
Oh, totally. I mean, you nailed it right there. Your longevity, if it does anything for you in terms of your professional development, it allows you to see the story play out in their lives and through their charitable giving.
Absolutely. I kid you not. My favorite things are to see a student when they're just starting and they're that freshman and really green and awkward, and you know, they come to a conference and they just are learning and growing for the first time, and then you get to see them mature and hopefully become a chapter officer or chapter president. They might come to some of our other more pinnacle leadership programs, and then see them graduate and grow up. I mean, you know, to have them get their first job, get married, have their babies. I mean, I've gotten to see all of that, and some of them, you know, now we're in their mid-30s, 40s, and to see their successes, and they attribute so much of it to their fraternity experience, for me is incredibly rewarding. And just, you know, I think that's what's really fun, is to be able to, know who those people are and to remember what their experience was like, and to then hear them say how much it made a difference in their life, and to see them go on and be so successful. I mean, that's really what, at the end of the day, makes me smile.
Oh yeah, I totally see it. I mean, you get that $1,000 check, right? And you have a depth of understanding of what that from that 42-year-old who you've known since he was, you know, for the last nearly two decades, since his college years. And you get that $1,000 check, and he's starting to sort of choose to start giving very philanthropically and generously to an organization that was very formative throughout his life now.
Yeah.
You understand the depth of meaning in that $1,000 check so much differently than I think so many organizations and so many fundraisers. We get these $1,000 checks and we just don't, there's not a lot of depth in our understanding of why these people are giving these gifts.
Absolutely.
And it's because we don't understand the story that sort of why we don't understand why this donor has chosen to sort of prioritize that $1,000 for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even if you haven't been with an organization, to tie it back all together, you know, somebody listening to this and say, okay, that's good for her, but what about for me? you can still start, right? Like, you don't have to friend all these people on social media, but pick up the phone and call them, or have your trustees or your board members call them. You know, get to know them and ask them why, and why your organization means something to them. I think often we forget that, right? Like, we forget when we're doing fundraising why somebody has made that gift. $1,000, or name the price, like even $50 is still sacrificial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Given it to something else. And, you know, that's back to like why I write a note to every person, why I believe stewardship is probably the most important piece of fundraising that you can do and need to do it really, really well. Stewardship is something I present on a lot and just really subscribe to the importance of it, because it makes people feel good. It also makes you feel good. You know, it makes you feel, it reiterates, I guess, or makes you feel more what you're doing is making a difference. And I think then it, you know, good works beget good works, or gratitude makes more gratitude. And if you feel happy about the philanthropy that has arrived in your office versus feeling, gosh, like, oh, I have so much to do, or I have so many thank yous to do. I have to remind my staff this time of year, we are busy because this is important. Like, we have a lot of gifts that we need to enter in our database, and this is such a good thing. Like, keep it coming. And trying to have that attitude of positivity and a grateful heart, I think, just makes a big, big difference. Beside, you know, instead of like, oh, this is just another piece of what I have to do with my job.
Allison, I could keep you going. It's a fascinating. I've got other questions on the end of my tongue, but I know that we oftentimes lose our listeners after we hit about 35 minutes in. So I'm going to let you go. But if there is somebody who's listening and they're interested in reaching out to you, maybe they want to talk about your organization or perhaps this concept of longevity.
Sure.
How would you suggest that they do that?
Probably best is just through LinkedIn at Allison Rickles. That's probably the easiest way, or you can look up Farmhouse Foundation and find our website, and my contact information, my email will be on there. But LinkedIn is always a perfect way to connect. So
perfect. I have really enjoyed this conversation. I'll be thinking about it all day. It's certainly been a pleasure, and you are always welcome back. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it, and happy holidays.
You too.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.